You are listening to the Effective Statistician Podcast, the weekly podcast with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske, designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients while having a great work-life balance. In addition to our premium courses on the Effective Statistician Academy, we also have lots of free resources for you across all kind of different topics within that academy. Head over to theeffectivestatistician.com and find the academy and much more for you to become an effective statistician. I'm producing this podcast in association with PSI, a community dedicated to leading and promoting the use of statistics within the healthcare industry for the benefit of patients. Join PSI today to further develop your statistical capabilities with access to the ever-growing video on demand content library, free registration to all PSI webinars, and much, much more. Head over to the PSI website at psiweb.org to learn more about PSI activities and become a PSI member today. Welcome to another episode of The Effective Statistician. And today I'm super excited to have a former colleague of mine joining me here on the show. And that is Chris. Hi, Chris. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm really happy to be here, Alexander. Thank you for the opportunity. Yeah.
Today, we will talk about how not to lead innovation or transformation and how to completely mess it up so that you are absolutely sure you generate no value whatsoever. And so, Chris, can you speak a little bit about how you came to that topic and why kind of leading innovation and transformation is so important to us statisticians?
Yes. So I have come to this topic basically the last 15 to 20 years of my career at Eli Lilly and Pfizer have all been inside of biometrics, more on the statistical side of biometrics. But I've had roles that have put me earlier in an optimization type of role, and more recently, last 10 or so years, in a digital transformation role. And that involves experimentation and innovation, which I'm going to define in a moment, because there's a difference between the two. And so doing this and having my success depend on it and having success at each company has made this important to me. And I've learned a lot of what to do and a lot of what to avoid based on my direct involvement.
Yeah. And now you have, as you can actually see here, if you're not listening to this as a podcast episode, but you're watching this on YouTube, because this episode we have both in as a podcast episode as well as a video episode. Chris has now his own company, Colangelo Advisory Group. And I love your tagline, think differently. So tell us a little bit about what you do there.
Yeah, thank you for that. So this is independent consulting group with the aspiration to get into longer term advisory at some point. And so the basis of this is to really share what I have learned and be able to impact more broadly the industry than when I'm at a single company. Mm-hmm. So there are limitations, there are boundaries inside of a company, whatever company may be. And I'm looking to have a broader impact. I'm looking to not be necessarily censored. And some of what I will talk about today would be frowned upon. So working inside of a company, there's a lot of politics that are involved. Yeah. In one's success, and that doesn't always lead to what is really best in a given situation. So this has removed some of that limitation for me and given me the opportunity to have a broader impact.
Yeah, And it's definitely a topic that lots of people that start their own company come from. They have grown and impacted individual companies. And now, based on their experience like you, you can actually help many companies or the industry as a whole to lead innovation and transformation. So let's dive a little bit into these two topics, innovation, transformation. What does it mean for you?
So to level set, I am a former biostatistician that always had a computational bent. Yeah. Based on the title so far, one could think that I'm a computer scientist that is trying to find applications, but I'm coming at this from the end user perspective. I'm coming at this from you and I would have used things that we're talking about innovating or transforming here. And in fact, we did. And so getting out of portfolio support as a statistician, stat programmer, and now getting into the infrastructure that helps other statisticians and programmers and data scientists, I guess is the new sexy term, is where my sweet spot has become. So from that perspective, innovation is really the experimentation of change for this conversation. And so when I say experimentation, it is how do I add value by doing things differently than before? Mm-hmm. It's not just doing different, it's adding value by yeah. doing something different.
Yeah.
Right? The father of management, Peter Drucker, said, you know, innovate or die. And if you don't add value, it's not really innovation.
Yeah.
And transformation is taking what you have shown adds value through your experimentation and now making it permanent, or in pharma, we'd call that production operations. So the goal of this is to positively change how we operate. It's yeah. not merely just to have a certain technology or a certain technique. Nowadays, the two letters that are A and an I are very, very sexy. But if you don't use them the right way in the right place and build operations around them, they can become somewhat of a sticking point rather than an enhancement to doing things. And also the challenge in my experience is to maintain business continuity. So there's a couple of big words there. Let me just make sure that we're level set on that. So especially in big pharma, the revenue model, the money involved is so huge that if we were to break, say, a submission before we submit, we're going to delay.
Yeah.
And when we delay, we take time away from earning money because of a limited patent life.
Yeah.
And so one of the challenges is to positively change our operations, innovate to learn how to do that from a technology perspective, and then roll it out to our people without causing any kind of delay or confusion or rolling out something that breaks once you get it rolled out under stress or something to that effect. So there is maintaining the transition from how do I work today to what is my future state. And that becomes a big challenge that has choked out a lot of innovation from my perspective.
Yeah, and I completely can see that there's a lot of fear in that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you change from an old software to a new software, yeah, and with this, and then this old software is not longer available, and now something happens and you can't respond, you can't change, you can't kind of comply with regulations whatsoever, that is a big, big problem. Or you change from one thing to another, and then there's always the fear that will regulators accept that? Will that has, you know, will that give us, instead of giving us an advantage, will it actually create a disadvantage for us? Yeah.
Right.
So will we be worse off later than afterwards? And yes, there's always this kind of managing a transition period where maybe both things work in parallel, or what if we kind of stop one thing and the other thing is not yet ready, or it is, you know, not implemented in the right way, that people are not trained enough to actually do it, and therefore things get delayed. I'm pretty sure there's lots of fear in people that are more high up in the execution, in the executive areas, that any kind of change that comes, especially in an area what they don't understand, disrupts the business. Yeah, and such, and actually, you know, in a negative sense, disrupts the business. Yeah,
Alexander, your point is spot on, and we could stop here and park and have a really long conversation. So I did not intend to pick on AI today, but this is a great case study. So we as an industry are in various stages of experimentation versus how are we actually leveraging in production work AI, let's call it AI technologies. And it's understood that there can be a positive change on operations. Okay, so let's understand the first two of these are seen as continue on. The maintaining business continuity when AI is involved, the reason I'm using that as an example, is it takes decision-making, it takes some impact away, it takes some accountability away from humans that we all know. Your favorite person that has a PhD from Harvard that's been in their role 25 years might now not be necessary like he always has been, and just oversees what the AI does. So there is a transition period of how do we still use that person's expertise, but in a different way, because we're having AI do part of the work. Now we're having both of them do what the person used to do on his own. And so there is the opportunity to scale. You can see the opportunity to get additional productivity out of that. But what we need to do is maintain the core expertise and oversight of what is being done from the computer perspective based on the expertise perspective of that person. Yeah. And that is transitioning.
Yeah. And in this transitioning, does anything kind of weird happen? Yeah. Do we put our internal knowledge at risk? Yeah. So if we feed anything into something, will that then become public and can our competition use it, or all these kind of different things? There's a lot of things that especially also higher ups might not understand, given, you know, the technical details and technical complexities and these kind of things. Yeah, can make things really, really difficult.
Absolutely. And we're going to talk about that a little bit more in the upcoming slides, but you're absolutely spot on where we're going and what the concerns are.
Okay, so let's talk about the different things you can do to completely mess up innovation and transformation here. So what is the first one?
So I have, for our conversation, I've broken this down into five domains or five topics. There is going to be some degree of theoretical overlap. I'm using this to help us structure a conversation and help our participants to understand where we're going and take from this what is helpful to them. And so you can see I'm differentiating mindset from decisions and policies. But I'm calling the three out. I'm calling out emotions and communication. So I think those five dimensions are something that need to be done well to get to your point from before, the most value out of doing things differently. Mm. And that the common thread in innovation and transformation is let's do things differently. And we are at the age now of the digital age, the information age. So it's basically, let's do things differently with, I'll call it cyber or computation. Yeah. And so we need to, as humans, we need to share the world with them, with that technology, and interact with that, because it's absolutely coming. And we come from an industry, pharma, that was very much scientist driven, manually driven, and this can be uncomfortable for some people. And that's why it's more important for leadership. And I don't mean leadership as a position. Yeah. I mean leadership as a verb, to actually be leading, yeah. To be helpful and positive and shepherd people to be comfortable with this. And we'll get into that going forward. And so to your question.
Yeah, so let's stay there for a moment with these five things: mindset, emotions, policies, communication, and decision. Do all of these need to come together? So is it kind of, you know, you need all of them, or is it okay to make sure that you have at least three under control and two maybe not so important? And so if you have at least three, well, you have the majority under control, and then things will work out. Or is it, so does it work kind of in a in an additive way, or is it more kind of a multiplication, that if one of these is zero, then you definitely break?
That's a great question. I do not think, in my opinion, that they're all weighted equally. Okay. I do believe, to your point, if hypothetically, as a mathematician, you go boundary case, right? If I have one, you get a certain amount of value. If I have all five, we're gonna get more, right? And yeah. And in between. So I really, in my opinion, believe that mindset may be the most important one, because I think that it underpins some other ones here.
Yeah.
And so if there was mindset, but there was the failure to do what is needed on the other four, I think there's still going to be some value, but it's not going to be value that is desired or, unfortunately, even expected.
Yeah.
One of the times that we tend to oversell and under deliver, which is negative, of course, is in change efforts.
Yeah.
Because that transition period, which can be years, is not really figured in, because that's not a sexy aspect of a value proposition. Right? Today to the future, your future state, your vision, whatever you want to call it, that comes into play. The transition from today to tomorrow, let's call it, it has to come into play.
Yeah.
And so we tend to overstate like the time to value and say that, well, once we get this up, there's going to be time to value. And in my experience, that is more often done despite well-meaning people. The folks that know the business the least tend to over-accelerate when the time to value is going to be.
Yeah.
Meaning they reel it in so that it's sooner, instead of understanding the real impact on operations and individuals.
Yeah. People generally overestimate how quick things can change. Yeah.
Right.
No, how quick things will change. Yeah. So especially when it comes to change, things always tend to be longer than expected, more difficult to be expected, and there will definitely be things coming up that you have not expected. Yes. And so with the discussion today, we'll go through a couple of these potential problems that you will face, yeah, and that will hinder you in terms of the speed to value, as well as how much value you generate overall. Yeah, so both things kind of play a big role. If you think about this like a S curve, yeah, from low value to high value, yeah, we speak about, you know, how stretched this S is, so how long you get from low to high, as well as how big the overall gap or gain actually will be. Yeah, so both are driven by these five things.
Yes.
Okay, so let's start with mindset.
Okay, there is a lot under mindset, certainly more than the two bullets that I have, but I believe that this will start to give a flavor. One of the things in my experience of leading cross-functional teams, so leading digital or IT teams, business teams, there can be quality teams that are involved, is the terminology, the nomenclature, and the understanding. And there are times that, let's pretend you and I didn't have kind of the same background. We could say actually the same word.
Yeah.
So the phrase, just as an example, integrate data to data management is going to mean something different to a statistician,
yeah,
for example. Integrate data is multiple collection sources being assimilated, and integrate data to a statistician typically is going to mean a cross study.
Yeah.
Right. So you can say the same words and all think that you're going forward together and not. So I find that it's best to get level set on terminology.
Yeah.
And optimize and innovate can share some characteristics that are the same, but really they're different. So this is the Chris Colangelo definition of these words for our conversation here. Optimize takes the way things are and makes it as good as it can be.
Yeah.
And innovate says there's a better way to do it. We can fundamentally change and it'll be better.
Mm-hmm.
So as a statistician, if we were to think in terms of like conditional probability, it's keep basically the same way we do it, just do it better. So get a faster horse, like Henry Ford is credited with saying,
yeah,
as opposed to let's make a car.
Yeah.
Right. Is an example of an innovation. And so if the people just want to keep the same but make it better, that is obviously going to limit the ability to change in a radical way.
Yeah.
And yeah. So to protect something is different than to maximize value. There's an example that I could use in a couple of places here because I think it would apply. There is well-meaning management out there that have said, hey, we have spent years building up our library of standards, for just as an example.
Yeah.
And we have a library of SAS macros that is amazingly complex. So whatever you build has got to make sure that we use all that. Now, that touches upon business continuity and transition, but it also touches upon, oh, I have a limitation in how I could change because I have to link back to what exists. And yeah, there are other examples that just came to mind for me. So when we go to maximize, it's basically I've got a clean slate.
Yeah.
And how do I take what we do and break it down into what is minimally necessary to do it, and then build it back up or architect it in a way that uses the most modern technology, that uses our information, that uses our current expertise coming out of universities and schools, because that's different now than it was 10, 20 years ago. How do we take advantage of all that to be as modern as possible on what we must have in order to run a compliant and efficient business?
Yeah, and I'm the endless examples of that in terms of optimize versus innovate. One of my favorite examples is delivering tables.
Yeah.
There is an endless amount of optimization going on in delivering tables faster, with higher quality, with less cost, all these kind of different things. When my question very often is, do we actually need tables? So,
right.
I have another episode that talks about tables are not our key deliverables. Very often, we don't need to deliver a table. And when I say that to people, some people think like, Alexander, you're crazy. Of course we need to deliver tables. This is how we generate value. And I said, no, we don't. We could generate some kind of interactive graphic, yeah, and it would provide more value, be much cheaper, easier, and all kind of different other things for the purpose that we want to get to. And doing that is incredibly hard, yeah, because of this mindset issue.
I absolutely agree. And so to add on to what you're saying, there is a need for data to create an interactive visualization or whatever else it winds up being. And so there's a mindset, it's more of an old school mindset. It's very understandable because we grew up this way, that I've got to create a table or a figure or a listing. And you can credit many software companies, but I think SaaS gets the main credit for that, right? So that was the way that we stored statistical analysis results. And it was also the way that we reported or conveyed them, communicated them to someone else. An example of being in a different age right now, between a digital age and information age, is if we look at a table, figure, listing, everyone's familiar, it could be SAS, it could be R, it doesn't matter how it was created. There is a component of results, and then there is a way that the results are outlined or styled or structured. And if we break that apart so that we can database the results, then there is a wealth of opportunity to feed a visualization, whether it's dynamic or whether it's interactive. Yeah. There's the opportunity to later create a table, figure, listing if that is needed. There's the opportunity to flow those results to something that has to do with data mining or AI or machine learning, where it can be combined with other things to gain new insights. I just rattled off 3 or 4 use cases for those results that create great operational advantage by isolating the actual statistical analysis results electronically versus how they are reported or communicated. Yeah. And so, yeah, that can be hard for some folks to get their mind around.
Yeah.
That's a great example.
Yeah. Okay, mindset is one of the key things, and really look out for the mindset that is within your organization, is within the people that you want to take with you through that transformation. Kind of the smaller brother of mindset is emotions. What are your main thoughts about, you know, how emotions can hinder your transformation?
So one of the implications of what I said before, but I'm going to say more explicitly now, is that anyone can come up with the greatest future state, can use the greatest, latest, sexiest technologies. But if we're rolling something out to 500 users, and the 500 users go, I don't like it, I'm not using it, you're not going to get value from it.
Yeah.
And so this is, the first bullet is really for the organizational change component of this. And I'm going to pick again I am more diverse than AI, but I'm going to pick on AI because I can tap into something that you said before. It is kind of the fear of the unknown. And so when AI is doing something, it is almost seen by some people as magic. It's almost similar to having a black hat and pulling a rabbit out when you get some insights from AI. And there is a general concern that AI is going to make my expertise obsolete or replace me. And so there's only half-hearted acceptance at times when there really is opportunity. Mm-hmm. And so it is how there is management of this. And it relates to the communication part that we're going to get to in a moment. And it really gets to focusing on the bigger picture. So we are in the middle of the fourth industrial revolution right now, meaning we've had three industrial revolutions. And if we look back historically, we have expanded and found that there is more to do. There's new things to do. There's things that we didn't fully understand because we were focused on a foundational part and trying to make that successful. And once that was handled for us, for example, that freed us up to tackle other aspects that we weren't focused on before. Yeah. There's infinite complexity out there of things to look at and things to study and things to do and things to get into. And if we focus too much on a certain task is going to be done via computer and people believe that that's their value is doing that task, it's going to be scary. Yeah. If we focus on, you don't have to do that task anymore, we have other things that we're going to get into, then it becomes more of an opportunity.
Yeah.
And so I think there is a big role of communication, which should be done by positional and actual leaders who is influencing people to highlight the opportunity that comes from this.
Yeah, you will always have in any size of the organization, and the bigger the size of the organization, the more clearly you will see that people that will more tend to one or the other extreme. Yeah, so you will have people that are very, very fearful of change and that are highly resistant to change. And then you will have others who are very, very opportunistic and absolutely, you know, see the opportunities, are very, very risk tolerant and jump on it straight away. And you need to identify who these people are. It is absolutely crucial because when you, at the beginning of the change, only talk to the fearful people, yeah, you will not get your things off the ground because all their fear is will do, it will stop you in the tracks.
Yeah.
The important thing is at the beginning of change, you need to understand where are all the people that have this opportunistic mindset, that have this very, very high risk tolerance, that jump on these things very, very quickly. Very often, these are the people that also understand more about these. Yeah, not necessarily, but very often. And because they kind of, you know the risks and all these kind of different things. But they are just kind of less fearful. They really look for the opportunity. Yeah. And so these will become your biggest advocates for driving later change and going through this kind of change curve and then convince others.
Yes, I absolutely agree with what you're saying. I'd like to add on to it that Peter Drucker, like I said, uttered the phrase innovate or die, really crisp and clear. And that applies to organizations. It applies to people. Mm-hmm. So if someone is saying, I don't want to upskill, I don't want to evolve, I don't want to, you know, learn how to fit into a new way of doing things, that might tell you that, you know, they have actually run their course, or they're not going to help bring your future to become normal. So there are multiple things that can come from this. To your point, there is the communicate that, how do we rehabilitate a fear? How do we accelerate an opportunity? There's different communication there. Yeah. But there is also understanding, how is something going to be accepted? How is a change going to be accepted and utilized so that there can be maximization of value? Because anytime that there's fear, it's going to slow something down or limit, yep, or limit something.
Yep.
And it's relatively close, that they share some DNA with response versus plan. So really more what I should say is react versus plan. React is really a fear-based, hey, you're forced to do something and you don't necessarily think about it, versus a plan being, all right, I have thought about this. And so there can be very planful messages that highlight how we can mitigate fears and maximize opportunities, for example, but in a reactive way, that's probably not going to be really great. In a planful way, that'll be great. So knowing that there's different types of people that have fear versus opportunity emotions in them, there can be a plan of what are the capabilities, what are the user interfaces, how are we rolling things out, and what sequence, et cetera, to maximize the group of people, the end users, that are going to, you know, experience the change.
Yep.
And
yep.
So just being aware of this can absolutely help with success. But living in the fear and reactive type of mode is going to truncate.
This show was created in association with PSI. Thanks to Rain and her team at VVS who helped with the show in the background, and thank you for listening. Reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients. Just be an effective statistician.